A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 112. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Changes. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
The Changes was a children's television serial from BBC One that first aired in 1975 in 10 30-minute episodes. And it was about a strange event known only as the Changes, or sometimes as the Madness, which turned all of mankind, or at least all of mankind in England, against machinery and technology and caused people to destroy technology. So you got this type of post-apocalyptic world where there was no technology left, or very little technology left, but all of the people were still there. And we follow Nikki Gore, who is a teenage girl who was separated from her family in all of this. Her family, we believe, have fled to France, and she is trying to find her own way in the new world that we are left with.
That's right, and it is a new world, and we see it through Nikki Gore's eyes. As you say, she struggles to survive. She's been separated from her family, and she's got this post-technology world to sort of get by in. So there's no sort of any form of mechanized transport. There's no way of storing or processing food, and there's no communications and so on. So we've got Nikki sort of on her travels trying to get by, but also, I think, trying to make some sense of the changes and what might have caused them. And we do get some sort of hints about the causes as time goes on in this serial. And it's an interesting show. It's, as you say, 1975 children's television, but dealing with some of the issues that we would see dealt with perhaps on a larger sort of canvas in a few months later in Survivors, which we talked about on a previous episode of British Invaders.
That's right. So if we continue the story a little bit from what we set up when we talked about it last time, Nikki has been essentially adopted by this group of Sikhs, this East Indian Sikh family. A very large family who is traveling together. They are not affected by the changes. They are still comfortable with using machines. But the people who are affected by the madness have a tendency to be able to sense technology and even things being written or said about technology, and will come to find it to destroy it. So Nikki, who is affected but is not quite as strongly affected as some, is able to be their canary, their person who can say, yes, the things you were doing are okay and will not cause people to come and deal with things with violence. And the Sikh group and Nikki gradually establish a working base at an old farmhouse, at an old farm, and start setting up to farm it, but without machinery.
That's right, and they've got this sort of relationship that they form with a nearby village, which is sort of quite helpful, I think, for both parties. Although before we get to that, they have an encounter with some very violent raiders who have, by the sounds of it, just been attacking various settlements to survive. And they attack this particular village. And in particular, they threaten the villagers' children. And it's the Sikhs who sort of lead the fight back against this group, Brian, in some interesting and impressive action sequences for us.
Yes, it was quite powerful, these ideas of the children being threatened, that, you know, if the villagers do anything to harm these raiders, then the children will basically be set fire to. It was some pretty strong stuff, but it was interesting how they set things up, because the Sikh group originally had a very sort of cold relationship with this village. The village was very wary of them, but the Sikhs were able to manufacture some simple tools. They had a blacksmith shop which was working, and the village didn't have that, but they had animals and different things that they could provide to the Sikhs. So they set up this very sort of pragmatic trading relationship that was very distant and cold, with Nikki sort of acting as the go-between. And it's when the village is threatened by these raiders that the Sikhs say, well, they'll come for us next. So they come to the defense of the village. And it does give us some interesting drama in that whole process. And at the same time, it does some interesting things with pushing this relationship forward to be not quite so cold, and for them to then respect each other more. And it sort of slowly modernizes the people who are there, which is really quite interesting.
It is. It's good stuff. And as I say, we also get the action sequences of the battle between the Sikhs and the raiders. If we say that some of the fight sequences, and in particular one where you see one of the raiders being thrown quite violently from his horse, if you'll recognise him, he's Derek Ware, quite a well-known stuntman and stunt choreographer who did a lot of work on Doctor Who over the years. So you can sort of see his mark on the fight sequences here, Brian, and they're all quite well done.
Yes, that's right. It is sort of classic 1970s BBC type work.
And we should also mention, you know, the portrayal of the Sikhs and their community. And they're portrayed extremely positively at a time on British television where, you know, we have to confess that portrayals of race were not always terribly well done. But interestingly, in science fiction, you know, usually, we've talked about this before on shows like UFO, usually it's done very well. And here's a very sympathetic portrayal of the Sikh community, who are seen to be resistant to the changes and peaceful, but able to help out in a violent crisis, and generally just, you know, an interesting portrayal all round.
Yes, and that was very well done in the books as well. I think Peter Dickinson, when he wrote the books, had researched Sikh culture and communities quite a bit for that, because there was a fair bit of detail there, and it worked quite well and carried over to the TV version, I think, quite well as well. Now, we sort of move from there into a point where Nikki is being told, really, it's time she should go to try to find her parents and sort of move to be with them if she possibly can. And this is where they segue from one book to another. They're moving from The Devil's Children to Heartsease. And moving from one village to another trying to do this, Nikki is injured and finds her way into another community, into another village.
That's right, yes. And unfortunately for Nikki, it's sort of out of the frying pan into the fire, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. She goes on her travels again, looking for her parents, and instead she finds herself in another village, which has its own particular set of problems. We've seen the last village being attacked by violent raiders. This village is sort of controlled from within by a very powerful and tyrannical preacher, the character Davy Gordon, who describes himself as the Witchfinder General. And he sees, or he interprets for the villagers, a lot of the events of the changes as witchcraft. And unfortunately, Nikki's arrival is used by him as yet another example of witchcraft. And so she finds herself on trial, accused as a witch, which is, again, you know, after the unpleasant sort of threats to children in the previous village, it's quite sort of grim and gritty stuff for this children's TV show, Brian.
Yes, it is. You have Davy Gordon as the type of character who really is basically a bully. He's bullying the adults into seeing things a certain way, and they all are affected by the changes, or nearly all are affected by the changes, and they agree that technology and machines are wicked, but he pushes that further and says, you know, well, this person was found, you know, Nikki was found hiding in a tractor, you know, she had to go somewhere, but because she was able to go so close to it, she must be a witch and should be burned. So they have this very hard sort of situation where Davy Gordon is pushing them into going along with these very harsh types of actions.
Yes, as you say, I mean, it is, you know, it's unpleasant and it's harsh, and you've got Nikki on trial, and, you know, her problems just continue, really, don't they?
Yes, you also have a couple of other teenagers there who are aware that Nikki is not a witch, and they are not affected by the changes, and they are working to help free Nikki, to help get her away from all of this. And this ultimately leads to Nikki escaping this village, of course, but the events are quite involved, and they last for three and a half episodes or so.
Yes, that's right. There's escape sequences and there's chases. I suppose some of the sort of typical features of children's adventure television, you know, capture and escape and recapture or the threat of. But it's reasonably well done here, and it does sort of keep the story ticking along with events to entertain us while perhaps not quite getting to explain the changes. But, you know, stuff keeps happening.
Yes, this run of it does have a bit more of that sort of children's adventure TV kind of feel to it. But the story is strong, so it works well, I think.
Yeah.
And that leads into Nikki going up into the mountains and looking for what is actually causing the changes. And this is then getting into the book The Weathermonger. And it follows in a fairly short form in the last couple of episodes, last two or two and a half episodes maybe, follows some things there.
Yeah, the serial moves into its final act, and without, you know, wanting to give away too much, we get again some references back to the weather disturbances which seem to accompany the changes right back at in the first episode. And I think we get this phrase that the weather is referred to as necromancer's weather, I think, Brian.
Yes.
And this may lead us to this strange character, Mr. Furbelow, who's living in a cave. And we've sort of hinted at the strange stone that we see at the end of each episode on the end credits. So it's sort of like it's building up. There is going to be a sort of climax, and we're going to get some explanations after Nikki's adventures along the way.
Yes, that's right.
And it explains a lot of things. Like why Peter's cows went right so suddenly. Why the Joneses' baby died when it was on a mend. Because that girl's a witch, and she's brought trouble on this village. Now I'm going to ask you for your verdict. Guilty or not guilty? Guilty! Hang on a minute now, hang on. I was forgetting the proper order of things till Peter here reminded me. Now, the rules say that we must let the prisoner speak. No, I don't reckon there's much he can say, but you give her a chance. Come on, speaker.
Now, we have mentioned and hinted at the books on a number of occasions now, and I think we should get into that a little bit more about this series of books and how the television adaptation relates to those books. So, originally, the three books were The Weathermonger, released in 1968, Heartsease in 69, and The Devil's Children in 1970. And it was clear in those books that they take place at different times, and it's clear that The Devil's Children, which was released last, takes place sort of at the beginning, their earliest of them, and The Weathermonger, which was released first, obviously takes place at the end, you know, in the last sort of segment of things.
And then in 1975, we've got them publishing The Changes, a trilogy, which collects the three books together. I presume this was to tie in with the TV show. And, of course, what happens for the trilogy is that they are then put in a different order. The order is reversed. So we have The Devil's Children first, and Heartsease, and ending with The Weathermonger. And I think also, Brian, you've read these recently. Peter Dickinson added introductions for each book.
Yes, he wrote a new introduction for each book. And with the introductions, that really does set the order, because the introductions refer to the previous book and the next book. They have lots of references to the different books in them. And they also complete the information about the final fate of some of the characters and where they actually go after the book's end. So I actually quite liked the introductions that they added, and I think it works quite well in that trilogy form in that order. The books are actually quite different from one another. There are no characters that are in common between those books. Each book has a completely different set of characters. Only those introductions from 1975 will refer to characters from more than one book. But outside of those introductions, you have a completely different set of characters and a completely different location for each book. And the only thing that ties them together is the changes or the madness itself. And that concept and the phenomenon of the changes having happened and this abhorrence and hatred of machinery and of technology is something that has happened and is very strong in all of those.
Okay, so the first book, or rather the first book in the revised order, is The Devil's Children. And that forms the basis, I think, of the first four episodes and sort of is fairly faithfully adapted to the screen in Nikki's early adventures and being separated from her family and meeting up with the Sikh community who take her under their wing. So I think that's the first book, Brian.
It was quite a faithful adaptation. I felt that the casting and the characters fit pretty, you know, they really fit quite well with what was in the book. There were a few differences, but they were pretty minor. In the book, you didn't actually see the riots where technology is destroyed. The book starts sort of shortly after that, and it's only in back references that you realize what has happened. And it starts when Nikki's parents have already gone. They've already been separated. It is a little bit different in the beginning, but the way it's played out and the characters of Nikki and the Sikh characters and the various villagers, all of it is actually, it's quite faithful. It's quite well done. I think they made Nikki a little bit older for the television version. She was supposed to be 12 in the books, I think. In the book, I should say. And she was a little bit older than that, but I think the character was pretty well done.
Okay. And as you say, we've got the actress Victoria Williams, who was a bit older, so that probably fits in for the TV adaptation. She manages to be convincing, I think, as a 15-year-old. She wouldn't have got away with playing a 12-year-old, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think it worked. It worked well in the story. That was fine to have her as that age as well. For Heartsease, the middle book, they did a rather simplified adaptation for the television version, and they inserted Nikki into the story. Nikki was only in The Devil's Children in the books. And in fact, there was a different character who was accused of witchcraft in the book, and that character was more of a supporting character, so the other children who were a little bit more in the background in the television version, they were the protagonists of the book, and the person accused of witchcraft was sort of a little more in the background, and there were a couple of characters that were dropped completely, two or three characters who were dropped completely for the television version. So they did change quite a few things. There were a number of things that were changed, but I think the essence of the book, the story of it and a lot of the characteristics of the characters they did use, I think were pretty good. So all in all, I think that was a pretty reasonable adaptation considering they were reducing it a little bit and adding Nikki into it.
Okay. And that brings us to the third book, I think?
Yes, The Weathermonger, which they changed that a great deal. They actually didn't really do an adaptation of The Weathermonger. They pulled a few parts of the latter parts of The Weathermonger and adapted that. They did it with different characters. There were some characters who were only in The Weathermonger in the books who were not in there at all. And instead they used Nikki and they used one of the characters from Heartsease and sort of set up a new, much shorter story that used some of the same ideas and some of the same sequences and some of the same scenes and things from The Weathermonger. So it was a very sort of abbreviated version of that that was just used to conclude what they had been doing with the rest of the changes. So if you were looking for an adaptation of all three books, or if you were looking for an adaptation of The Weathermonger, you really don't get it. But as a way of concluding the changes based on how they ended things in The Weathermonger, I thought it was okay.
So I guess we move on to discussing the good and the bad of the changes, the bits we liked and the bits we didn't like quite so much. What would be your overall feeling to start us with, Brian? What were the things that stood out to you?
Well, I did enjoy this. I liked the characters, especially. I liked the sort of interaction and character drama they had with the Sikh community and the villagers and with Nikki. It had some nice political things to it. It had some good character moments. and the story elements were good and used that very well. So the sort of the way those different pieces were put together and sort of hinged quite a bit on the characters was something I enjoyed a lot.
Yes, there's good work there. As we've said, we've talked about the very impressive portrayal of the issue of race and community, very sensitively and well done. And as you say, interesting characters and some quite, I think, quite good performances for children's televisions. Some of the young actors doing good work here, particularly, I think, you know, Victoria Williams is very good as Nikki.
She is. I did enjoy her character more in the book. I think she was a little less sort of whiny and complaining in the book.
Right.
And, you know, the way she was portrayed was really quite neat and worked well as a 12-year-old. But doing it a little bit differently, she did work quite well in the television versions. And certainly the other characters from The Devil's Children, so the Sikh characters, the villagers, they were all very faithful to the books, and I thought they were very well done, and the relationships and the sort of politics I really enjoyed.
Okay. The look of it, it's sort of filmed very well, I think. You know, we talked about the impressive sequences of empty streets or of the streets filled with rioters who are basically sort of destroying technology in the streets, and that's quite well done. There were some bits that seemed similar to Survivors, although I think I noted that Survivors tends to be much rainier and muddier than The Changes. Things slightly sunnier here, Brian.
Yes, that's true. Maybe that fits well with those particular stories. I don't know.
Yes, possibly. Yeah, it does seem to be that The Survivors was the grittiest of the 70s sort of post-apocalyptic shows.
That's probably true, yes.
What did you think about the look of the show?
I thought it looked good. I think it was a good fit for what they were trying to do. I would have liked to have a better quality copy of it than what I was watching because it was sort of a little beat up and not so great. But on the whole, I think it looked good. It was the right kind of thing for what they were trying to do.
Okay. I also liked the title music and the title sequence. Again, it sort of sparked memories for me because I sort of could remember the opening sequence and the music when I watched it again. It brought back memories of the show from the 70s.
It did sort of help to remind you of the riots and the violence and the destroying of technology that was very intense in the first episode, but naturally becomes something you see less of later on. So with the title sequence was a nice way of sort of reminding you about what has been lost in such a short period of time.
Yeah. And we get a little sort of introductory recap at the start of each show, which I think was sort of fairly common for children's television, I suppose. We get a little voiceover recount of where we've got to in the story.
Yes, those were done reasonably well. When we get into Heartsease, the second book, I have to say that I did miss some parts of the book because they removed some characters and some ideas and things. And in some ways, it was too bad that they couldn't have done a little more with some of the things that were in the book. But again, I think the characters that they had there were also done quite well. Maybe not quite as well as some of the earlier ones, but they certainly fit quite well with what was in the books. You know, they came across quite well. And I think the story that they did for that was good. It was not quite at the level of the first one, maybe, but it was done pretty well.
Okay, you've read the book, so you can spot the problems with the adaptation between the two.
How do you feel, you know, knowing where the books divide and when you're looking at sort of the first story and the middle story? Did you feel that there was a difference or that one section of it was stronger than another?
The earlier section did seem stronger to me. The bit in the section in the middle where she becomes captured and put on trial as a witch perhaps had a few problems, and partly because it falls into that classic sort of children's adventure that we talked about where people escape and then there's chases and so on. So maybe a few problems there. In a way, you know, I sort of wanted it then to get back on with the story of the changes themselves. But we know that's not going to come for, you know, a few episodes down the line.
So what did you think of the final few episodes and how they bring things to a conclusion?
I was glad that they did come to a conclusion. You know, I did want to find an answer. You know, whether it's a satisfactory answer, I shall leave for people to make up their own minds about it, because I don't want to discuss it too much without getting into spoilers. But, you know, it does get us some conclusions, which is nice. you know, we could almost compare it to the end of Children of the Stones. And again, without giving too much away, I suspect the Children of the Stones ending leaves a lot more open to interpretation than this one.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. And that's a good point. The final chunk of this, in a way, does feel a little more like Children of the Stones and a little less like something like Survivors or Day of the Triffids.
Yeah.
I will say that while I liked the whole serial, it was definitely good. The first chunk of it was sort of my favorite, then the section in the middle was a little weaker and still very good, but not quite as strong as the first one. And the final couple of episodes, which were more related to the book The Weathermonger, although they didn't cover that much of that book, they were probably the weakest of it, even though they were bringing the story to a conclusion. I think they did a reasonably good job of bringing the story to a conclusion. And I think they were still good. They didn't let down the serial or the story, but they were still probably my least favorite segment of it, just because it's not quite as interesting as all of the dealings with how does society react to this situation that you have earlier on.
Right. Okay. Anything else you had a problem with in this serial?
I had very few problems with it. Like, I can say that, yes, these parts, the earlier parts, were better than the later parts. But really, on the whole, it was, and it did get into a bit of the sort of adventure show cliches. But on the whole, it was really pretty solid. I have not that much that I can complain about. And quite honestly, the segments adapting The Weathermonger at the end were a little bit weaker, but I personally found the book The Weathermonger was the weakest of the three as well. So to a certain extent, it was the material they had. But all in all, I think the choices that they made, certainly most of the choices they made in adapting it, were good ones. And it was a pretty solid show.
Okay.
If they find you, they'll kill you. We know that. We couldn't let them murder you. We knew you weren't a witch. Does everyone else in the village believe I am? Well, most of them, because Davy Gordon has persuaded them. Well, men more than women. You see, since the changes, they believe that doing things like this is God's will. Glardad is really a kind man. But he's not all
so we should perhaps talk about the one major problem with the changes then, Brian.
The availability.
Availability brings us to the problem of availability. And the simple answer is that there isn't really any availability. We know it was rebroadcast on UK Gold over here in the UK. But that's it. No VHS or DVD releases.
You can find unofficial copies of it on DVD that people will send you for shipping and handling. You can find downloadable torrents and things online. Nothing official, nothing that's been licensed, but you can dig it up from various places if you really look for it. And we tend not to cover that many things on British Invaders that have that sort of situation where they're really not available. We try to keep it to two or three a year and no more. But there are certain things, like the changes, that are so important and well-remembered that we really feel that we should talk about them. And this is definitely a series that is crying out for a DVD release. Anyone at the BBC, if you're listening, please release this.
We'd like the opportunity to buy it.
I would love to buy this, yes.
Okay, so it is difficult to get hold of, although, as you say, Brian, there are ways. So, should we get hold of it? What about our recommendations? How do we feel about this show, Brian?
Well, I will give it a solid recommendation. It is not one of my very favorites. When it comes to the post-apocalyptic shows, I do prefer original Survivors and 1981 Day of the Triffids to The Changes. But The Changes was very good. I have few complaints about it. So I would say, yes, absolutely. If you can get a hold of this, watch it. It's a neat little post-apocalyptic children's series. It has lots of good stuff to recommend it.
Okay. I'm going to put it in the context of children's television from the 70s. So we've got to rate it with, as we say, Children of the Stones, Time Slip, and perhaps Tomorrow People. I think probably I'd put it in behind Children of the Stones and Time Slip, but it's a pretty good show. The only big problem with it, as we've said, is that it's not available on DVD. I think I'd be able to give it a better recommendation if it was easy to get hold of. So it's perhaps a cautious recommendation from me. If you can find a way of watching it, do. And as ever, if you do get to watch it, jump in on the Facebook group and let us know what you think.
Please do. We've already had some interesting comments there about it. And yeah, please comment about that. Interesting comparison there, Eamon, putting it against other children's shows from the 1970s. I think I might put this at about equal with Time Slip.
Okay.
But certainly behind Children of the Stones, I would say.
Right, which is still one of our high points for children's television here on British Invaders.
Absolutely, that was a classic. So, in summary, The Changes was a 10-episode serial that covered the three books of Peter Dickinson's trilogy, The Changes. And it chronicled what happened after the madness, or The Changes, afflicted England and caused most people to abhor machinery and technology and to seek out technology and destroy it. And this rapidly brought society down and brought us to a situation where it was not safe to use technology, even if you were able to. And we followed the adventures of Nikki Gore, a teenage girl who was affected by the madness, but made her way and befriended a group of people from the Sikh community and became involved with some political things with different villages and went through all these different experiences, from that to becoming hunted as a witch and all sorts of things happening there, and finally to bringing things into a conclusion and discovering the actual cause of the changes and working with that. So it was quite an eventful 10-episode serial for British BBC television in the 1970s.
Okay, very interesting little show, as ever. Do tell us what you think. Jump in on the Facebook group or on the comments page on the blog and let us know if you've had a chance to watch it. And do jump back next time and join us. We're sticking with children's television, but we're moving forward to the 80s and to ITV and to look at Chockey and the two sequels, Chockey's Children and Chockey's Challenge, which were, of course, based on and inspired by the novel Chockey by John Wyndham. Another familiar name for us here on British Invaders, Brian.
Yes, John Wyndham was a great science fiction writer, and it's always interesting to look at the things that were based on his work, so it will be quite interesting to talk about those shows next time.
Yeah, fun discussion coming up there.
I think so. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for your company, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, saying goodbye.